Sometimes you get cut by what others have broken. Maybe it's when you stepped on a shard of glass at the beach from a bottle that someone had carelessly thrown away. But that stuff happens all the time because we live in a broken world. And that damage can go way beyond a Band-Aid. That might be you raising grandkids because their parents are incarcerated, or paying the expense of putting your adult child into rehab, or all the legal fees bleeding you dry as you fight an unfair lawsuit, or the abuse from your childhood that is still causing you pain, or constantly dealing with the lies of a manipulative ex after your divorce, or the bullies from broken, dysfunctional homes who channel their hurt into hurting you. In all sorts of ways, you can end up paying the price for the sins of others in this broken world. That's what we saw. The reason I bring it up is that's what we saw this past week as we read the story. Because what we read last week in the story talked about the early years of David's life. And for that time, for years, David's life is entirely rerouted by the actions of King Saul, and it is entirely unfair. Because David's done nothing wrong. He's been loyal. He courageously saved his entire nation by killing Goliath. But that success, ironically, is what convinces Saul that David is a threat. Let's read 1 Samuel 18, starting in verse 12. Saul was afraid of David, because the Lord was with David but had departed from Saul. So he sent David away from him and gave him command over 1,000 men, and David led the troops in their campaigns. And in everything he did, he had great success because the Lord was with him. And when Saul saw how successful he was afraid of him. So Saul sends David out on these dangerous missions, hoping that he would get killed, hoping someone else would solve his David problem. But David comes back with win after win. 1 Samuel 18:28, so when Saul realized that the Lord was with David and that even his daughter Michal loved David, Saul became even more afraid of him, and he remained his enemy the rest of his days. Now David is going to pay a price for Saul's unspiritual heart, for his insecurity, for his paranoia, and man, David really pays a high price. David is Saul's best warrior. He's a hero. But he must sneak out a window at night to escape. And when he does that, that breaks up his marriage with Saul's daughter, Michal, and also separates him from his best friend, Jonathan, who's Saul's son. So this is splintering Saul's family. But it's also impacting David's whole family, too, because David's parents and his brothers are also fleeing, losing their homes, because they, too, are in danger of Saul, because Saul doesn't play by the rules. And he will take out his frustration on them too. Let's pick up a story, 1 Samuel 22. So David left Gath and escaped to the cave of Adullam. And when his brothers and his father's household heard about it, they went down to meet him there. And all those who were in distress or in debt or discontented gathered around him, and he became their commander. About 400 men were with him. And from there, David went to Mizpah in Moab and said to the king of Moab, "Would you let my father and mother come and stay with you until I learn what God will do for me?" So he left them with the king of Moab, and they stayed with him as long as David was in the strongholds. In their old age, when they should be enjoying retirement, David's parents lose their home and their farm. His brothers, who once fought for Saul's army, are now seen as criminals too, and so they all have families. They're married, they've got kids, and so despite all they had done for their country, this entire family, it turns out, no matter where they went to try to escape Saul, there were some fellow Israelites willing to turn them in to Saul. And so they constantly had to be on the move. And so I just want to stop and say, if you're paying the price because of someone else's bad behavior, David understands. David gets it. And in fact, he wrote many of his psalms. In the biblical book of Psalms, he wrote poems, he wrote songs for you when he was facing this same thing. And in many of those psalms, what he asks is, why does God allow this? And why does he allow it to go on for so long? And in those Psalms, we're not given an answer. And we don't know. I mean, God let Saul, unfaithful Saul, rule for 42 years. He let Saul upset plans and break up relationships and harass David for years. So when it comes to you, why has God put a certain burden on you caused by someone else's sin or immaturity? Why has he let it go on for so long? Was he taking so much from you? I don't know. I can't tell you why. But this morning, I do want to talk about what to do while you are going through it. So watching David, sometimes he is the perfect example for us when it comes to this sort of thing. Sometimes he has this wonderful clarity and courage. He knows exactly what to do and why when it comes to dealing with his Saul problems. You know, at least twice it appears that God has just handed Saul to David. Once Saul wanders into a cave by himself to go to the bathroom, not knowing that David is hiding in the back with his army. I mean, David could have easily walked up and slit Saul's throat. He was completely unprotected, all alone. Another time, David is able to creep into Saul's camp while everyone is asleep and get so close that he steals the spear that's stuck in the ground next to Saul. Again, it could have been so easy to kill him. He could have taken that spear and just, in one jab, ended all of this. In fact, that's what the guy that was with David tells him to do. But David steadfastly refuses to. He has clarity about this is what I should and should not do. And this is what he says that night. He says, "As surely as the Lord lives, the Lord himself will strike Saul. Or his time will come and he'll die, or he'll go into battle and perish. But the Lord forbid that I should lay hand on the Lord's anointed." He's not going to commit a sin to get what he thinks he deserves. He's not going to take unethical shortcuts. He's going to wait on God. But at the same time, he doesn't just cower. He doesn't just remain silent about what Saul is doing. And here is, again, is a good lesson for us. Here's what he says to Saul, to Saul's face. It's 1 Samuel 24:12. "May the Lord judge between you and me, and may the Lord avenge the wrongs you've done to me, but my hand will not touch you." In that, I think, is a very important principle for us when we're being put through things like this. Because David holds the guilty responsible, but he leaves room for the righteous God to act. Now, we're called to forgive. If you're a Christ follower, if you're a Christian, we're commanded to forgive. It's not an option. We are commanded to forgive. Because we can't accept the forgiveness for our sins, but refuse to extend that same love and forgiveness to others. If that's where we are, we don't get God. We don't understand our salvation. We have to. We must forgive. And the way that David manages this is an excellent model for us when we struggle to forgive someone else. Now, I think what we are called to is we have to be willing to get to the place where we want to forgive. And it's a journey. It might take a while. But that's what we want to be able to get to. And forgiveness, just so we're clear, forgiveness does not say it didn't matter. If it requires forgiveness, it does matter. It was wrong. And forgiveness doesn't make excuses for bad behavior. Forgiveness does not protect those who wronged us from the consequences and the punishment of their choices. Forgiveness does not require that you pick up and continue a relationship like it was before. In this encounter, I think David handles it perfectly. He says to Saul, "God will judge what you've done to me, and it's not going to go well for you." But David's going to leave that to the righteous God, because God always judges rightly. And what he does with that person is going to be what needs to happen for that person. It's going to be the right thing for that person. He knows what that person needs. He knows what that person deserves. And if that person deserves punishment, what God can do to that person that is troubling you is far worse than anything that you could do to them. So David, I think, shows an incredible restraint, incredible clarity and faith this time. But sometimes David gets tired. You know, when we get tired, we lose focus. We get impatient. We decide to take matters in our own hands, and that's when we get in trouble. And so David is tired. And what he's going to do next, I think, is take a wrong turn. In his tiredness, I think what he decides to do next is a wrong turn. Here's what happens. 1 Samuel 27:1. But David thought to himself, one of these days, I'll be destroyed by the hand of Saul. The best thing I can do is escape to the land of the Philistines. Then Saul will give up searching for me anywhere in Israel, and I will slip out of his hand. There's nothing better than to flee to the Philistines? If I was there, I would have said, really, David? There's nothing better? Nothing else you can think of that's better than that? Now, on a practical basis, there's some logic to this. If David is in Philistine territory, Saul probably won't risk starting a war just to get to David. But now, to be allowed to stay in Philistine territory, David's going to have to convince the Philistines that he is an ally to them and a traitor to God's people. And before we watch how this all unfolds, what this decision does, I'm going to admit, running all the time, that had to get exhausting. Hiding in caves, it'd be hard to be discouraging. Saul once killed 80 priests and an entire town for helping David. They gave him some bread, and Saul killed an entire town for that, and David felt responsible for those deaths. And then, David's entire family has been uprooted all because of him. And it wasn't his fault, but at the same time, I'm sure he feels guilty about what's happened to them because of him. And so I'm sure he's tired of all this running. But all that time, what's been going on? Well, God has also been protecting David through all of it. God is somehow always provided for the hundreds of people following David. It says in 1 Samuel 23:14, day after day, Saul searched for him, but God did not give David into his hands. Day after day, here's where David is, in God's hands, in God's all-powerful, all-capable hands. That is what has been protecting him day after day through all of this. And God's already promised David he's going to be the next king of Israel. That the prophet Samuel came and anointed him, told him, you're the next king after Saul. And so he knows that's the future promised him by God. So this new strategy of partnering with pagan Philistines, is that really his best choice? Were Philistines better protection than God? Living by faith and with integrity can be difficult, yeah. But compared to what? Consider the alternatives. We need to ask that before we decide to get revenge or to fight dirty or to give up on waiting on God. As difficult as it's been up until now for David, let's see what comes next as the friend of pagans. Let's see if that is any better. So David and his entourage go to the city of Gath, which is the very city where Goliath was from. Of all places, I don't know why on earth he chose that city. But he goes to Goliath's hometown, and the king there is named Achish. And so David asks Achish for permission to live in a town on the frontier between Philistia and the tribe of Judah. So somewhere where David would not be under the constant watch of Achish, but still be in Philistine territory. So let's pick up 1 Samuel 27, verse 5. Then David said to Achish, if I found favor in your eyes, let a place be assigned to me in one of the country towns that I may live there. Why should your servant live in the royal city with you? And so on that day, Achish gave him Ziklag, and it has belonged to the kings of Judah ever since. And David lived in Philistine territory 1 year and 4 months. Now David and his men went up and raided the Geshurites, the Gerzites, and the Amalekites. From ancient time, these people had lived in the land extending to Shur in Egypt. And whenever David attacked an area, he did not leave a man or a woman alive. He took sheep and cattle, donkeys and camels and clothes, and then he returned to Achish. And when Achish asked, "Where'd you go raiding today?" David would say, "Well, against the Negev of Judah, or against the Negev of Jerahmeel, or against the Negev of the Kenites." He did not leave a man or woman alive to be brought to Gath, for he thought they might inform on us and say, "This is what David did." And such was his practice as long as he lived in Philistine territory. And Achish trusted David and said to himself, "He has become so obnoxious to his people, the Israelites, that he will be my servant for life." You understand what's happening? You understand what David is kind of falling into here? So David and his small army will go out to towns that are claimed by neither Philistia nor Judah and attack them and kill everybody, but keep the plunder and the livestock. But since he leaves no eyewitnesses, when he reports back to Achish, David lies and said that they raided towns in Israelite territory. And so the people he's killing, let's talk about that. The people he's killing, these are from Canaanite nations that the Israelites were supposed to destroy in the conquest of the Promised Land generations before. And so he is fighting on land that, it was promised to Israel, and he's doing what Israel had been commanded to do under the ban, so he could justify it that way, I guess. But this doesn't feel the same to me. There doesn't seem to be a larger strategy beyond just raiding and plundering to feed his army and get wealth. There's no mention here of, well, we're expelling pagan influences, where we're following the Mosaic law. It just doesn't feel right. Does it to you? Maybe I'm missing something, but this is all done as part of an elaborate lie. And when you tell a lie, you must tell another to cover the first, and then another. And to keep up this charade, David is forced to take this to increasingly dangerous lengths. Pick up in 1 Samuel 28:1. So in those days, the Philistines gathered their forces to fight against Israel. And Achish said to David, "You must understand that you and your men will accompany me in the army." So David, you understand, we're about to go fight your people. And you're one of my guys now. You must come with me. And David said, "Well, then you will see for yourself what your servant can do." So Achish replied, "Very well, I'll make you my bodyguard for life." So David and his men are now marching with Philistines to fight against their own people. And David is saying, "Man, let me at them. Let me show you how well I can slaughter Israelites." This is supposed to be the future king of the Israelites. So if you're an Israelite following David, do you still trust him? I mean, do you feel good about where he's leading you? So the Philistines gathered all their forces at Aphek, and Israel camped by the spring in Jezreel. And as the Philistine rulers marched with their units of hundreds and thousands, David and his men were marching at the rear with Achish. And the commanders of the Philistines asked, "What about these Hebrews?" And Achish replied, "Oh, that's David. Is this not David, who was an officer of Saul, king of Israel? He's already been with me for over a year, and from that day he left Saul until now, I found no fault in him." But the Philistine commanders were angry with Achish and said, "Send the man back, that he may return to the place you assigned him. He must not go with us into battle, or he'll turn against us during the fighting. How better could he regain his master's favor than by taking the heads of our own men? Isn't this the David they sing about in their dances? Saul has slain his thousands and David his tens of thousands?" So Achish called David and said to him, "As surely as the Lord lives, you have been reliable. I would have been pleased to have you serve me in the army. From the day you came until now, I have found no fault in you, but the rulers don't approve of you. Now turn back and go back in peace. Do nothing to displease the Philistine rulers." "But what have I done?" David asked. What have you found against your servant from the day I've come up until now? Why can't I go and fight against the enemies of my lord the king?" David pushes this ruse to dangerous lengths. I mean, is this easier? than what he was doing in Judah, running from Saul? He's calling a pagan Philistine his lord or master. One of the very people God commanded Joshua to destroy completely because their influence was so poisonous. He says he's absolutely willing to go to war against his own people, the Israelites. And who's over there? Who's over there in the other camp? It's his best friend, Jonathan. It's Saul. Is David going to kill his best friend, Jonathan? If after all this time, David has been refusing to kill Saul, now alongside Philistines, he's going to do it? Because of the decisions that David has made, it's getting difficult to tell who the good guys are now. It's getting difficult to decipher where David's heart is, what's motivating him. The other Philistine commanders, understandably, say to Achish, "Are you crazy? Letting 600 Israelites march in the middle of us while we're fighting Israelites?" So they send David back to his town. Thankfully, I think God stepped in here. I think God stepped in and sent David away from the battlefield that day. Because it turns out that Israel's army would be overrun by the Philistines, and Saul would be killed, and Jonathan would be killed. What if David had not been sent back? What if he had to charge the Israelite army at the side of the Philistines? Well, that would have destroyed David's credibility. How would he ever reverse course and be a godly king for Israel after killing Israelites to aid Philistines? God saved him. I'm convinced God saved him that day from a really bad decision this time. But God also slapped David back to his senses with a shocking discovery when he got home. Because here's what happens. 3 days later, when David and his men arrived home at their town of Ziklag, they found that the Amalekites had made a raid into the Negev and Ziklag. They had crushed Ziklag and burned it to the ground. They'd carried off the women and children and everyone else, but without killing anyone. And when David and his men saw the ruins and realized what had happened to their families, they wept until they could weep no more. David's two wives, Ahinoam from Jezreel and Abigail, the widow of Nabal from Carmel, were among those captured. And David was now in great danger because all his men were very bitter about losing their sons and daughters, and they began to talk of stoning him. But David found strength in the Lord, his God. The reason this could happen, the reason that David's family was unprotected that day, is because he had been gone with the Philistines, who were about to kill Israelites. Maybe God took everything away to get David recentered. I haven't felt good about where David's heart and head are for a while now, until we get to that last verse. But David found strength in the Lord his God. There, finally, is some moral clarity. His strength and protection and future were not with the Philistines, not in this double life. David chases down the Amalekites, he rescues all of his people, and then after this, he goes back to Judah. After this, he's done with this whole pretense with the Philistines, and he stops pretending. He gets his identity, and he gets his allegiances straight again. Okay, application time. So when you are so weary of dealing with lies, with other people's irresponsibilities, of fighting the unfair consequences of others' actions, of paying for the sins of others, of waiting on God, it's tempting to fight back just as dirty, to get revenge, to start making some sketchy decisions that seem practical. If that's where you are, here are a few verses to get you recentered, to clear your perspective. First is Psalm 18:25. To the faithful, you show yourself faithful. If you stay faithful to God, if you keep obeying him, trusting him, keep being holy like your God is holy, he'll take care of you. He'll give you what you need. Secondly, Psalm 121:1-2. I lift up my eyes to the hills. From where does my help come? My help comes from the Lord, My help doesn't come from the Philistines or acting like a pagan. When you're wondering how you'll pay your bills, your only option is not a job where you're constantly tempted to sin or where you're involved in something immoral. You don't have to do something unethical to provide for your family. You don't have to strike a bargain with the devil to survive. Multiple times, God had protected David from Saul while he was in Judah. God distracted Saul, humiliated Saul. He hid David. He fed David. God could have kept on doing that. David got tired. When we get tired, we forget that God never gets tired. The good God never runs out of ways to be good to us. The all-powerful God whose dominion extends to every last planet at the utter ends of the universe can reach us with whatever we need, always. His arms are never too short. His resources are infinite. The God who made everything can make a way where there seems to be no way. And no matter what you're enduring, I can't tell you why it's happening. But here's what I can promise you. It's not because God doesn't love you. He is loving you right now, in the middle of it, loving you perfectly. Romans 8:31-32. Since he did not spare even his own son, but gave him up for us all, won't he also give us everything else? He'll give you what you need when you need it. Stay faithful. Stay obedient. Keep trusting him. Ask, and it'll be given to you. Seek, and you'll find. Knock, and it'll be open to you. Let's pray. Our Father in heaven, I pray today for all those who are listening, who are in the midst of it, for those who are the patient sufferers, the long endurers, for those that you have asked so much of, for those who are waiting on you and they're tired. I ask, Lord, that you just speak into them. I ask that you show them that you are there. You are all sufficient. I ask, Lord, that you give them the courage and the conviction and the clarity to see clearly that the best choice always is to stay in you, to stay with you, to keep leaning on you. I ask, Lord, that you just make so clear to every one of us who is tired and who is waiting and who is wondering that you are always the one, the faithful one, who will be faithful if we just stay faithful. So Lord, bless everybody who is in it. I ask, Lord, that you protect them, surround them, guide them, deliver them, like you've always done, like you always can do. And we thank you for that. I praise you, Lord, for all that you are and all that you do. In Jesus' name, amen.